Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So tonight I'm going to be speaking about Bhagavad Gita as it is. I'm going to read chapter 18, text 70. And I'll read the Sanskrit myself and then the English translation. Adyeshyaste chayamam eva. Adyeshyate chaya imam dharmyam samvadam avayo jnana yagena tenaham ishtasam iti me matahi. So Lord Krishna says, and I declare that he who studies this sacred conversation of ours worships me by his intelligence. So the Bhagavad Gita is a conversation between Lord Krishna and his friend and devotee Arjuna. And like most of the Vedic literatures, it's presented as a conversation where there are questions and answers. So it's not a dogmatic presentation. Krishna says some things. Arjuna asks him questions. He has different doubts that he inquires about, and Krishna responds with answers that reply to his questions and doubts. So most of the Vedic literatures are presented in this way as conversations between a guru and a disciple, or the Supreme Lord and a devotee. And the main topic of the Bhagavad Gita is the nature of God. And in the course of Bhagavad Gita, we see that many different conceptions of God are presented. And finally, the most complete understanding and conception of God is presented. So, within the Bhagavad Gita, you can find things about atheism, the absence of God. Now, for example, in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's one verse, Asatyama pratishtam te jagat ahur an ishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kamahaitukam. And that means, in this world, there are some philosophers, there are some people who do not accept the existence of God. And Krishna summarizes their philosophy. You know, they say there's only matter. Matter is the only thing that exists. And matter is just combining in its own way. And it produces what we call consciousness. You know, modern scientists have an idea like this. You know, they say consciousness is produced by chemical interactions in the brain. If the chemicals combine in a sufficiently complex way, they'll produce what we call consciousness, but only in connection with the brain, so that when the chemicals in the brain become disorganized at the time of death, they would say, then there's no more consciousness. Of course, when consciousness is there, they say it can come up with ideas like God, which aren't really real. So these ideas are, you know, very common in the world today. But, you know, Bhagavad Gita presents a different idea, that consciousness is a symptom of the soul. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Mamaivam so jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana, manasastan indriyani, prakritishtani karshati. That means the soul is an eternal part of God. You have the conscious self, the atma, the jiva. There are different Sanskrit words for the conscious self. Is not just a temporary byproduct of bioelectrical activity in the brain. It has its own independent existence apart from matter. And really, it has a source, and that source is God. And the soul, the conscious self, is part of the supreme conscious self, just like a spark is part of a fire. You know, the fire is very big, but it also has little tiny sparks that are of the same nature. So similarly, God is very great, God is very powerful. He's the source of all conscious beings. He's the supreme conscious being. But as part of him, there are individual conscious selves, which are, like God, also sanatan, or eternal. So in Bhagavad Gita, there's some discussion of atheistic ideas and philosophy. Now, there are also in Bhagavad Gita many different descriptions of the different types of gods or God, you know, that people worship. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, there's an interesting discussion of religion in different modes of nature. According to the Vedic philosophy, there are three modes of nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. So everyone's consciousness in the material world is influenced by these material modes of nature. You know, a person in the mode of ignorance will be influenced by anger and envy and greed and madness and illusion. A person in the mode of passion will be aspiring for material advancement in life, you know, trying to accumulate fame and wealth and prestige. And those in the goodness, in the mode of goodness, will be trying to live a life of simplicity and self-control, which is good, but it's still material. It's not the completely spiritual aspect of life. So everyone, in terms of their work and their character and the type of religion that they practice, will be influenced by this. So in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that people absorbed in the mode of ignorance will tend to worship ghosts and spirits and things like that. So you can see in different parts of the world, you know, people may worship ghosts and spirits. You know, they want, for example, revenge against someone. So they'll pray to some ghost or spirit or something, attack this person, or they may want to control somebody. So, you know, there are different systems like that. Voodoo, black magic. You know, you hear about these things. So then people in the mode of passion tend to worship what Krishna calls asuras, or powerful personalities in the world who command a lot of attention. Such people will worship powerful people, politicians, sports stars. Of course, they may not think they're worshiping, but they put their picture on the wall. They offer things to them. When they come, they bow down before them. So they may not think it's worship, but practically that's what they're doing. And then Lord Krishna says that those in the mode of goodness will worship demigods. You know, according to the Vedic cosmology, the different forces of nature are all ruled by personalities. You know, just like in a city like Los Angeles, you know, they're the ordinary citizens. But then there are people who are responsible for providing the electricity, providing the water, providing, you know, keeping the roads in good order and things like that. So in the universe at large, according to the Vedic cosmology, there are personalities called demigods who are in charge of the sun, the moon, the waters, the rains. So in Vedic culture, sometimes people worship these demigods. And that's why, you know, sometimes people have the conception, oh, in India the people worship many gods, because they're aware of these demigods. So, according to the Bhagavad Gita, one should be aware of these demigods, but one shouldn't worship them. One should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, who's like the source of them. Krishna says, Aham Adirhi Devanam. I am the source of all the demigods. And whatever they can give you, they're originally getting from me. So better just to cut out the middleman, Krishna says, and go directly to me. So these things are described in the Bhagavad Gita. Worship of ghosts and spirits, worships of powerful people, worship of demigods. But the Bhagavad Gita rejects all of those things and says that one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in that sense, you know, the Bhagavad Gita is monotheistic in the sense that the Bhagavad Gita teaches, Lord Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. I am the source of everything. So there is, according to the Bhagavad Gita, one conscious, eternal source of everything. So, but this one source of everything has different aspects. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. It's said in the Vedic literature, this absolute truth, the supreme source of everything, has three different aspects. One of them is called Brahman. It means the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like there's the sun and then there's the sunshine. Actually, they're two different things. But sometimes if the sun is shining so brightly, you don't actually see the source. You just see the light. So in Sanskrit, that eternal effulgence, that light, is called Brahman. And it's impersonal. And people think, yes, there is a higher spiritual reality, but it's all one and it's impersonal. Yes, I'm a spirit being, but as an individual, my individuality, that's an illusion. Yes, there is an ultimate spiritual truth, but it's not God. It's something impersonal. And that when we realize that, we'll all be one. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna rejects that idea. It's true, there is a Brahma. But he says, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. From me, the person, this Brahman effulgence is coming. And it's not the highest level of God consciousness. It's a type of God consciousness, but it's a very low level of God consciousness. And it's ultimately not permanent, because really, as spirit souls, we're all personal. We can't stop having desires and acting. Try to sit alone in your room and do nothing and think nothing. Maybe you can do it for 5 or 10 minutes, but after some time, you desire personal relationship. And that's why in prison, solitary confinement is considered one of the worst punishments, because it's a torture for a person to have no other human contact and association. So, or just like, you know, you may try to swim underwater. I mean, you can do it for a few seconds, maybe a minute or 2 minutes, but eventually you have to come up for air. So the souls that try to absorb themselves in this impersonal kind of realization are not actually able to maintain themselves in that position. Either they have to go to the higher position of rendering pure devotional service to the personality of Godhead, or they have to come back and continue acting in the material world of birth and death. So that Brahman is one level of God realization. Then another level is the one that I also mentioned, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdite. So Brahman is the impersonal effulgence of God. Paramatma is the presence of God within the heart of each living thing. According to the Bhagavad Gita, within each material body, there are two souls. There's the individual soul, and then there is the Paramatma, or the super soul. And there are systems of yoga, like Patanjali's Ashtanga yoga system, that are meant to help people understand and connect with that super soul, Lord in the heart. But that is not the ultimate understanding of God, according to Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna says, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatain antaratmana shradavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. The yogi, the highest yogi, is the one who connects with me through bhakti, devotion, activities, just like we see on the altar here. The pujari is not just sitting and meditating on God. You know, the pujari is, they are actually doing service to the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because with our current material vision, we can't actually see the actual spiritual form of Krishna, but he agrees to become present in these archa-vigrahas, or deity forms, to accept service from his devotees. So in this world, we can learn to practice the activities of devotional service, offering garlands and flowers and food and worship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his personal form. So that is another form of God realization, realizing God within the heart. That is there, but it's not the complete realization or understanding or highest understanding of God. So there are other ways that the Bhagavad Gita explains people see God, or try to see God. Many people try to see the universal form of God. You know, like sometimes there, you know, you hear scientists or astronomers say, just look at this vast universe with the spinning galaxies and stars. And sometimes you see documentaries where, you know, they play kind of religious sounding music and it's all very wonderful and marvelous and overwhelming. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, Lord Krishna's friend and devotee, is given a vision of the universal form, or he sees everything like that. But again, that is not the ultimate form of God. It may be very awe-inspiring, but it's very difficult to have a personal relationship with the universe. People would rather have a parakeet or a puppy or a kitten, something, you know, to have a real relationship with. So, and then there's another aspect of that, which is seeing various qualities of God in nature. And in Bhagavad Gita, there's a whole chapter in which Krishna explains how to see him in nature. He says, I am the taste of water. Of seasons, I am the flower-bearing spring. Of mountains, I am the Himalayas. Of rivers, I am the sacred Ganges. He gives so many, I am the light of the sun and the moon. He says other things like, a fish, I am the shark. It's a very inspiring creature, the great white shark. People are fascinated. They go to the aquariums to see the shark or go on diving experiences, get in a cage. And go. Some people like to swim with the dolphins. Some people like to swim with the sharks. So one can perceive different aspects of God in nature. That's explained in the Bhagavad Gita. But at the end of that chapter, Krishna explains to Arjuna, but that's just a tiny spark of my splendor. That's just a fraction of the attractive qualities that I really have. That's the meaning of the name Krishna in Sanskrit. It means all attractive. And there's a way to discover that. There's a way to enter into contemplation of that ultimate attraction. So, the reason I'm going through these notes is this is a lecture that I prepared to give at a university. So there are all these more or less indirect ways to perceive God. And some people, many people, come to an understanding of God that is beyond the reflection of God's qualities in nature. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, Krishna explains, this whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. In other words, there's some perception of God as the ultimate source and controller of this world that we live in. And many philosophers and theologians focus on that aspect of God. It's part of what God is, but it's not the complete picture. God is the source of everything. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, Lord Krishna says, I am the source of everything. He is the controller of everything. Mayad Yakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam, Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the controller of this whole material energy. Everything within it is under my control. So there are some scientists of different faith backgrounds who have tried to understand that aspect of God, that he's the intelligent designer and controller of all of the marvelous things that we can observe within this universe. So that is an aspect of God, his designing intelligence, his being the source of all of the energies that we can observe. And many people take it no further than that. But according to Bhagavad Gita, there are further understandings, more personal understandings of God. There's the understanding of God as the Father, the loving Father of all living things. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Aham Bija Prida Pitaha, I am the seed-giving Father of all living things. So, those who worship God as a Father, they tend to look at God as the order supplier. You know, they pray to God for material things. Dear God, please give me this. Please give me that. That is an aspect of God. But again, it's not the complete understanding of who God is. God is not simply our order supplier. There are deeper personal understandings of who God is. So God has many aspects. God can be perceived in nature in various ways. God is the supreme controller. He is the Father. He is in the hearts of all living things. He's within every atom. He can be perceived in the beauty of the sun and the moon and the different forces of nature. All of those things are part of what God is, but ultimately God is Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. And he's the source of all loving relationships. We all have a tendency to love. So that tendency to engage in loving relationships, different kinds of loving relationships, is a constitutional part of the nature of each soul. And it comes ultimately from Krishna. Each soul has a particular loving relationship with Krishna that is part of its constitutional nature. These relationships are called rasas. So rasa is a Sanskrit word. It has many meanings, but in this context, it means a particular loving relationship that gives the soul a particular kind of satisfaction. And the rasa is originally meant to be experienced in the relationship between the soul and God. But if we lose that relationship, then we try to experience those feelings and connection with others apart from their relationship with God. And those relationships tend to be very temporary and very mixed with different kinds of unhappiness. So there are five fundamental rasas or relationships that the soul can have with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One is called shanta ras. That means passive adoration. You know, like sometimes in this world, a person may have a very distant but adoring relationship towards another person. You don't have any personal connection with them, but you know of them, and you're just awed or inspired, you know, by that person. So that's called shanta ras, that kind of impersonal adoration. Then there is dasya rasa, the relationship of servant to master. Like, say if somebody really likes some particular movie star, really adored that actor or actress, and then somehow or other, you know, they get a position to be that star's driver or secretary or something, so that they're kind of in a relationship like that with them. It's more satisfying than just being another passive adorer. So some souls have that kind of relationship with God, where they perceive God as their loving master and they are God's loving servant. They constitutionally have the desire for that kind of relationship. Then some souls relate to God in what's called sakya rasa, means the relationship or rasa of friendship. You know, we might imagine, okay, there was a person who was initially adoring, you know, some movie star and then gets a job as their secretary. And then somehow after many years, they become their friend. It becomes not employer, employee, or master, servant, but friendly as equals. So some souls enjoy that kind of relationship with God, relationship of friend. And God agrees, although God is superior to everyone, God agrees to behave as a friend. It may seem quite mysterious, but we have to understand that God is all-powerful. I mean, I may be able to carry on a relationship with a few people, but God can carry on relationships with an infinite number of conscious selves. He can expand himself into infinite number of forms to have relationships with an infinite number of conscious selves. He's not limited as we are in our ability to carry on different kinds of relationships. So then there are other souls who have a parental relationship with God. that's kind of reflected in, you know, this painting there, where you have Krishna in his birth ceremony, and his, the devotees who are performing the role of his father and mother are there. So he agrees to become the perfect child. I mean, there are certain conscious selves who very much focus on being a good parent, a loving parent to their son or daughter. That is, why is that there? It's because it's there ultimately on the spiritual level of reality. So there are souls that enjoy that kind of relationship with God eternally. In the material world, the child eventually grows up, moves out of the house, goes somewhere. But in on the spiritual level of reality, the souls that enjoy that kind of relationship with God enjoy it eternally. There's never any separation. The child never grows up, goes away. You know, the relationship is never broken. And then there is the conjugal relationship, where souls relate on the spiritual level with God as the perfect lover. Of course, it's very difficult to speak about these things on this material level of reality, because we have our perceptions of what those things mean. But on the spiritual level, there's a complete absence of any kind of material contamination. There's an exchange of pure loving feelings between the lover and the beloved. So that's called the Madhurya Rasa. So there are these different rasas that are fundamental to the constitution of the soul and its relationship with God. And the aspect of God that fully accommodates the expression of these rasas or relationships is Krishna. So that is the highest conception of God. Not God as the Father, God as the controller, God as being present in the hearts of all as the super soul. Or God is the impersonal Brahman effulgence. The highest conception of God explained in the Bhagavad Gita is the personality of Godhead, who can accept all of our varieties of loving relationships and reciprocate with us eternally in those loving relationships. And each soul has a particular loving relationship with God, which it is meant to discover. So that is what Krishna is presenting in the Bhagavad Gita. He discusses with Arjuna all these different levels of God realization, starting from atheism and going up through all these different worship of demigods, worship of ghosts and spirits, worship of powerful people, seeing God in nature, the impersonal Brahman effulgence, the universal form, God present in the hearts of all, God perceived in the beauties of nature, God the Father, God the Controller, and finally, the most complete and perfect aspect of God, who reciprocates with each soul in an individual loving relationship. And that is why Krishna says in the final chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Pratyaja Mamakam Sharanam Raja. Just abandon all other varieties of religion and just surrender into that loving relationship with me. And that is the purpose of Bhakti Yoga, the yoga of devotion, which Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita calls the perfection of yoga, the highest yoga, the most perfect yoga. So I'll stop there. Anybody have any comment or question? Okay. Yes. Oh, you're up there. Okay. I was looking around for you down here. I was hearing a voice from the sky. Well, there are books. I mean, Bhagavad Gita is kind of like the introduction to all these topics. There are other books by great spiritual teachers that get more into these things in detail. So, in the spiritual world, the place where Krishna experiences his loving relationships at the highest level with his devotees called Krishna Loka or Goloka, Vrindavan. And there are other places in the spiritual world where Krishna accepts relationships tinged with awe and reverence, like in Krishna Loka, people don't even have a conception that Krishna is God. They're just attracted to their loving relationship with him. In some other planets in the spiritual world, they are aware of his nature of God, but that kind of, that's where that passive adoration can exist. Of course, it's said that even in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna Loka, there are the trees, the rivers, which also have personality, but they're more or less also in that Shanta Rasa. So, little technical aspect, but it's also explained like that. So now it's time for the feast, which we can break now for. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.